Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Initech.
No, you're working at Initech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
if I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holloway, and we're on the board. SP Futures up $4. The NASDAQ Futures up $10. We're trying to build on the rally of yesterday. Is Kevin with us?
I am.
How are you, bud?
I'm doing all right. Good morning.
What's the good word? You're going to have to tell me from the outside. You're going to have to solve the NVIDIA riddle for me. The stock traded 974 on Friday, spun around during the day and closed, I think, 871. Massive, massive turnaround. But not to be deterred, the Buy the Dippers had it up $60 today. It's up another 11 today. It's trading 931 almost. So the question is everybody who owns the stock getting one more chance? The big guy upstairs is giving him one more chance to get out, because it's, you know, relatively highly priced, unless you think it's, doesn't mean it's not going to go higher, because it could be the answer for the next 10 years. It could be. Or did the chumps on Friday screw those guys, they're the shoe clerks, we kicked them out, now we're off to the races, and they're gone, and they're weeping. One or the other, Kevin?
Well, I try not to weep too much, so I'm out of that derby. Well, think about it like this. So we've talked about them financing some of their customers, and so wouldn't they be very tied into an economic slowdown if we have one?
Maybe more than most.
Maybe more than most. So that's one thing to worry about. So it sort of depends on what you think the economy is going to do as to where you think it's going to go. And part two is, they have good product. They make very good high-end chips, and so it's the kind of stuff that's used not necessarily just for artificial intelligence, but also for a lot of big number crunching data analytics and things like that, so that are important. So they probably have some durability there as a product, but they also are in a market where people are bound to catch up to some degree, or at least start closing the gap on the viability of the product, or not the viability, closing the gap on the functionality and the performance that they offer.
Kevin, what exactly?
So that's going to be at risk at some point.
When you say chips, and they talk to these guys about the chips. Now, Kyle talks about it being they were chips for real high graphics stuff, correct?
Yeah, that was their strength. Those kinds of things that rely on chips to work.
He was telling me that the thing that they actually sell to people is like 70 pounds or 50 pounds. What is that thing when they hold it up? I mean, it's huge.
Well, have you cracked open a computer lately?
No.
Okay. Well, you'll see all these, these processor boards and things that get inserted in the slots in there. And that's, that's what they're really selling.
Okay, but in there's a gazillion little chips.
Oh, yeah. Yes, there are.
All right. Well, see, I mean, I just, when things run like this and they become, basically the cat's ass, you got to go at any price. There's been a few that have, kind of hung in there, and then there's a few that haven't. And plus, you have a market that really, by any stretch, I mean, even the guys on CNBC the other day says, when you start talking about $2 trillion companies trading 35, 40 times earnings, that's historically really high. You know, it doesn't mean, you know. But then again, Kevin, when you, you know, I'm always one of those guys that whenever I make a trade for anybody, I'm very cognizant of the fact that if I bought or sold stock, that I didn't do it with, you know, nameless, faceless, you know, goofball on a computer. I did that to a person, or we came to a, you know, an agreement. If I bought at 100 IBM, I bought it from you, but I'm not egotistical enough to say that for that particular minute, I bought it for all the right reasons, but you know what? You sold it for a reason, too, and you could very well be, you know, smarter than me that minute or that day or that week. But when you see this kind of general, maybe we are talking about a massive concentration of 100 of the biggest companies that everybody else is going to fall off. You've seen this in the last few weeks. I mean, I have positions for clients in all kinds of these indexes with the Protect Index program and stuff. Mm-hmm. And even on a day like yesterday, I don't even think the Russell made it into the plus column. So there's a big split here on some days between, you know, different parts of the economy. Now, granted, your S&P and your QQQ, your NASDAQ, are all dominated by these big seven stocks. So when they're all up, both of those are going to be up like a lot. But it doesn't necessarily mean the whole economy is moving, because the Russell was down most of the day yesterday, even though everything else was going to the moon. So, I mean, you wonder, your first instinct would be, and everyone, I mean, a lot of clients and a lot of new clients would say, well, this Russell is going to catch up. Let's get in the Russell. And I'm like, you know, not so fast. It's maybe we should put, you know, 40% in the Russell. But, you know, you got to be careful, because they just might never catch up. I mean, it may just be this is where we're heading, which I don't think is the right way to go. But, I mean, who's to say? I mean, the market is telling you, right or wrong, that 7 to 10 to 15 stocks are going to control the world in 2 years. Now, they never have. I mean, they never did during the 2000 era. They never did back in the Sony and, you know, in the AT&T, the conglomerate era. They were going to control everything, right? They were going to buy everybody. Mm-hmm. LTV and Litton Industries and ITT and those people. That didn't work out so well for them in the end. But who's to say that this time isn't different? You know, I don't know. Maybe it is.
Well, so this becomes a risk assessment exercise, and what are some of the risks? So when we go back to NVIDIA, we talked about financing and the risk on there. On the other side of that coin, do they have a product that is going to help companies save money, to help them cut costs? And if you think that's the case, then, you know, that's always good, even in an economic downturn. So, you know, I think you have to go and look at the risks. You have to look at the competition and what's really going on. What's AMD doing? What's Intel doing? How are they, you know, what's their timeline to catch up? I think all of those, you know, and I are there market analysts today like there always were who specialize in certain product lines and go out there and sort of assess all that kind of stuff?
I'm going to say not as many.
Not as many, and that, you know, so I guess we'll see where it all leads.
Well, but when the market runs something up to, say 35 PE, and maybe even in a retail segment, you sit there and go, that's a little rich for a retail segment. Does that mean that company is now not just a retailer, that they're a monopolist and nobody's going to catch up for a while and they can charge whatever they damn well please? Maybe. At least for a while. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's not, I guess I'm saying, it's not up to me to say, God, 35 PE for a retailer, sell, Mortimer. I mean, somebody thinks it belongs there, and some people are saying it's going higher. So, I mean, they're not all idiots. I mean, right?
I hope not.
Yeah, I hope not. I mean, so I mean, there is a school of thought that says somehow if it's trading 35 PE, somebody somewhere thinks it's supposed to be and it's going to 40 and 45 and it doesn't matter yet. Someday, somewhere, I think it does sort of matter. Now does the matter part mean that they blow everybody else away and they have pricing power and nobody else does? That could happen. I think that's happened in some of the retail areas. I think it's happened with the Home Depots and the Lowe's, because I think they are probably as much of a monopolistic area as there is. I mean, Amazon, you haven't been able to buy 2x4 from Amazon, have you? Or tile in and stuff. I mean, maybe you can buy tile online, but try and get all the different glues and the grouts and all that stuff. Good luck. I mean, you probably could. But now, are there, you know, these mini monopolists? Possibly. I mean, in Chicago, probably not. I mean, you've got some people that sell some of that stuff, the big boxes do. We also have a Menards. It's a big competitor. In a small town, I don't know, do you have two or three big lumber yards, or do you have one? I think they can charge everybody damn well please, right?
Yeah, as far as where I'm sitting, yeah, we have Lowe's, Menards, Home Depot, and then local, we have Big C. So,
you've got some competition.
There's lots of competition here.
Yeah. Now, is it really competition? I mean, is it Menards is cheaper, so they all lower theirs, or Home Depot is higher and they all raise theirs? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you on that one, Tom, because I probably spend too much money at Menards, but I try not to get too many of those projects going in the first place.
Well, yeah, I'm saying, but you don't really know. I mean, I have been aware that most of your big outfits, even the smaller ones, go and survey what other people are charging for stuff, like especially grocery stores and everything, right? I mean, if somebody's got a sale on asparagus, it seems like everybody does. Now, maybe that's, I mean, I don't think it's all, you know, universal, but I think
that's the providers making it available.
Well, I mean, but you also have, I think there is some research done on maybe they do a sampling of products or something. You can't do every single item, I don't think, but I think the Jewel knows full well what Myers is charging. I mean, on most stuff. I mean, whether they send somebody there every day or every minute, I don't think so, but.
Well, everybody announces their weekly on sale items in advance too. So, it's not like, you know, oh crap, you know, Meijer knocked down the price of X today, and so we have to match them. They've already announced what's on sale before we get to that.
Because I mean, because we're in this kind of era, Kevin. I mean, if anybody, well, let me kick the thing up. I actually looked at this. I sent it to you last night. I thought the particular report yesterday was absolutely horrible. I mean, we're talking the month was 0.6% unadjusted, and I just cannot. I was barking about it on the air. I always think of you because you're my organizational guy, right? And I just can't figure out how the hell.
Sounds very mafia to me.
Well, maybe, you know, to a certain extent, the mafia had an organization, right? Everybody does. By the way, you remember that?
You're my guy from the organization, yeah.
Well, remember the guy from, the author from the University of Chicago that wrote the book on how essentially street gangs were organized and how they were organized almost exactly like a business. I mean, there's only really one way to organize stuff. I mean, some people have bosses, and then they have bosses, and right? I mean, there's an organization chart everywhere, isn't there? Pretty much.
Much.
Anyway, but where I was going.
But getting back to it, I mean, this is, you know, the fundamentals of, you know, of how products work and life cycles and so on are all, they really haven't changed.
No.
You know, we talk a lot about how hot cloud used to be and wasn't. Well, you know, all that happened with cloud is it's still important, and there's still people, you know, selling a lot of cloud services and making a lot of money doing it. That's not an issue. What happened is it was pretty easy for other competitors to get in the market. So when it was really hot and it was really a growth thing, it was because Amazon had been offering AWS for a little while, but they were in there and it was booming with them, and then Microsoft kind of matched it. And now, you know, how many other people are in that space, in that market space, doing, you know, a booming business on it? And the example is tons. So is it a hot item? No, it's a commodity item now, because it just rapidly traversed that whole life cycle on the product and said, you know, what used to be a growth product is now a commodity. And, you know, it's a good cash cow for a lot of people, but it's not... You know, it's not the hot item from a let's talk about what's you know, what products are hot anymore because everybody's got it.
Well, Kevin, one of the most fascinating things in, well, and I don't own the business. I mean, in my business, the stock business, you know, in bonds and whatever, but is how stuff gets priced. And there's like a level for, like you just mentioned it without even knowing you were saying it probably. You mentioned when something's new and people are all agog for it, it gets priced kind of one way because then there's growth. There's huge growth, and companies are doubling, you know, every year. Now, but then all of a sudden, and someday you reach a spot where it can be priced, and people can actually put a pen to paper and say, okay, this is how much they're going to make, this is how much it's worth. And sometimes the numbers don't match at all. Sometimes they do. And you find this out with, if you want to do history of the market, which I'm not all that up on, but I know that in every situation way before we were born, when railroads came up, when the railroad was being built, and everybody was convinced, you know, how many towns are going to be built, how many cities, you couldn't put a price on it because you had no idea. If somebody said they're going to do 100 carloads a day and somebody else said there were 1,000, some other guy said 10,000, I mean, you could just run with it. And the prices went to the moon on this stuff. And all of a sudden, when the thing actually started operating, then you go, okay, the Kevin Railroad does 50 cars a day and they make $20 a car, which is probably a lot in those days. We can price that. Same thing happened with television. When the first radio TV station, NBC, I believe. Well, they were built, they were priced before they even launched the first TV show. I think at a price where they never even matched for another 20 years once they started, or 15 years. It was so high. So, I mean, it's not like it's unusual. I mean, like you said, the cloud. All of a sudden, one day, somebody said, hey, you know what? I know what this cloud is worth. Because look how much they're making. Look how much people are charging. Okay, it's a spectacular thing, but here's what it's worth. Same thing happened to eBay.
Well, and they can't maintain the same margins because they have, you know, a lot of price competition. So.
Well, eBay's probably the perfect example in our lifetime, in the last 20 years of our lifetime. I mean, you couldn't price it. Oh, my God, everybody's going to buy and sell everything on eBay. I actually did a calculation, I don't know how many years ago it was, where I think at that time they were only charging like a buck a transaction or something. I think they've gone higher. I don't know. But I think I've calculated that for them to grow into their price at those prices, now they've raised the prices, for them to be priced normally where they could, you know, they made like, you know, 20 PE and send everybody a dividend, like every man, woman, and child in the country would have had to do like 3 transactions a day or something. Obviously, they've raised the prices well beyond that. But still, you do these calculations and you go, wow, where are these people getting this price? But when it's hype, it's hard to argue, right? And now, how can you argue AI? I mean,
eBay had a lot going for them.
Yeah,
what happened was they stopped with what they had. You know, the platform never, you know, in terms of functionality, never got anything. Where Amazon kicked their butts was really on logistics, was on the delivery side. And eBay never matched that process for them. And so, again, as you watch products grow, you know, this becomes, eBay's problem was more strategy than anything. And I don't know who presided over that. I don't know if Meg Whitman was gone by then.
I was going to say, I think she probably left right about when it was heading south.
I'd have to go back and look at the history of it, because she did a whole bunch of other things after that before she ran for what she ran for, governor of California, and then took over HP. But the point is that, you know, how does your company evolve? What becomes, you know, this is like, you know, the Michael Porter industry analysis, and, you know, what was the vertical markets expansion for Amazon. Well, all of a sudden they had a growth product and they used that to fuel all of their retail platform as they went through the growth of the cloud stuff, because for a long time AWS was their big profit maker and they weren't making any money on the retail business. And what they did was they took that cash cow that they had that rapid growth product, and they used it to go back and fuel all the logistics stuff that they're really good at today.
Well, I know it's, we got a dash to break here, but I always have this snide view of Amazon, and it comes down to my view of, you know, we talk all the time on various people that come on the show about laws and laws that are not enforced and what are the reasons for them. To my dying day, Kevin, I'll never understand why states did not enforce the Amazon people not paying sales taxes. Now, whether it's because the governor's wife was buying crap on Amazon, I don't know. I mean, the governor is meaning plural.
And the governor's husband, too.
Or the governor. I'm saying there's some reason why, you know, everybody let that go for so long, because I think that's what put Amazon on the map. And the idea of walking into a brick-and-mortar place that's paying taxes and having people pull out their phone right next to you and buy the TV online where they don't have to pay taxes, I thought was the most abusive thing I've ever.
I think that probably helped Amazon sell a lot of big ticket items. I don't think it was any consequence buying, you know, socks and underwear.
Well, this is kind of before, you know, they became so that you could order stuff in a day. This is when they kind of first started out, where you were buying, no, you wouldn't buy a camera here or in State Street or in Wabash. You'd go online and say, I just saved $80 on tag. That was their shtick for probably 3 or 4 years they first started, Kevin.
Well, it seems to me that I did the same thing ordering from Apt and having it delivered here, too, though. You know, where I could buy a washer and dryer and they wouldn't collect the Michigan sales tax.
Okay, but I buy from those guys, too, but I'm always right here with them. So, anyway, right. SP Futures up 475, NASDAQ's up 475. We come back, try and go through some of the CPI stuff and some other things. Talk a little bit about, ran into a guy last night that he's convinced that all the stuff that's going on in football at the NIL is the same stuff that used to happen 50 years ago, just a little more, and it's in the open. I go, God, are you out of your mind? It's a whole different world. But you can tell me whether who's right, him or me. When we come back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar.
To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Andrew on the board. S&P futures up 5, NASDAQ futures up 575. That's the March contract. The June contract, pretty much the same thing, because we'll be flipping to the June contract, I believe, this week. I'm not positive on that, but I think it's this week. The Dow futures up 38. Individual stocks in the Dow, I've got nothing of any real consequence. Caterpillar's up 89 cents. Microsoft's up 288. Boeing still 183.90. Those guys have been, once they went back over 200, I thought they'd stay there. They have not. 183.90. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 14.1%, FTSE up 3, call that flat. Cacarano's got is moving, up 43.5%. Over in Asia, we have the Nikkei down 101.26. They're back a little bit off this 40,000 high, but not that far. 38.695. Hang Seng down 11, 17,082, call that flat. Shanghai down 12, that's 0.4%, but they're above 3,000, 3,043. Oh, yesterday in the U.S., a big, big rally. Dow up 235, S&P up 57, NASDAQ up 246, as NVIDIA made back, they made back their entire loss on Friday, but as of today, they're not that, they're 40 bucks from their high. That made it to like 974 on Friday to close it, I think 871, give or take. And now we're back to 929.24. So, like I said, either the chumps will be proven to be chumps, or everybody's getting their second chance and maybe they should take it. I don't know which is the answer there. Bonds up 1 basis point, 4.17. Bond unchanged, 2.32. Interest rates were actually up some yesterday. Japan, 0.77. Oil. Down up 108, 78.64, kind of mired in this narrow range in the high 70s. Brent up 103, 82.95. Natural gas down 3 cents, back down to 168. Wow, it went back. It bounced back to, I think, 198. Now it's back down here in its lows. I don't know if it's a buy again or not. RBOB up 3 cents, 261. We have foreign exchange. The U.S. dollars, the euro is at 109.36. So the euro continues to creep up just a little bit. British pound 120-128, kind of where it has been. We have gold, which is down a bunch yesterday, up $2 today, 21.68, still in the high 2100s. Silver up 11 cents, 24.50. Copper up 6 cents, 3.99, not quite 4 just yet. Crypto up another 1700 on the Bitcoin, 3,271. God, what bad could happen here? What do you have for us, traffic, weather, sports, Andrew?
All right, it is 6:40 here in Chicago on Wednesday, March 13th. Starting off with just a little bit of sports here. Some hockey, the Blackhawks won over the Ducks 7-2, but our Coyotes lost to the Wild 4-1. Over to Chicago weather, it is currently 40 degrees right now, mostly cloudy skies, and they'll probably stick around throughout the day. We're going to have a high of 53, and that's going to hit a little earlier than usual, around 12 p.m. And over in Phoenix, Arizona, they're currently at 55 degrees. They're going to have mostly clear skies. They're going to have a high of 76, and that'll hit around 5 p.m. Now, finally, for Chicago traffic, the inbound expressways are experiencing a little bit of delays, but thankfully no major accidents to report. Only thing to take major note of is if you're coming in on that inbound Kennedy, because we have that new construction and lane closures, they are experiencing pretty heavy delays around I-94. But other than that, things are about business as usual. So that's all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Kevin, the numbers yesterday, and I'm really stunned. I thought that CPI report was horrible, actually. And I organizationally, as I started to say earlier, we wandered off to better topics. I don't know why. I think it's because I listen to you. You're the one that's doing this to me. So there.
All right.
I'm just in the bowels of Washington. I'm fascinated by these adjustments and who makes them and what the politics is on them and how the politics makes its way down the chain. I mean, yesterday I went, I got bored with it again, but I went through the CPI numbers and how the unadjusted CPI for the month was 0.6 and the adjusted is 0.4. Now, we also got this asinine thing in one man's opinion where we talk about year over year. Well, okay, that's interesting, I guess, but why do we care what it was last January when we're worried about today? So back when I was doing inflation stuff, when I was a relative ute, your inflation was this month times 12, duh. Or if you really wanted to spread it out a little, you take the last 2 months times 6 or the last 3 months times 4. You didn't take the year, Kevin. Who's blowing smoke over who's behind with that one?
Well, to add on to that thought, all that you're doing is if a year ago the rate was high, then you're doing year over year against a big denominator. What's a big denominator do to the percentage?
Well, yeah, it drops it.
It lowers it. Yeah. And if it was flat a year ago and you're doing year over year, then you have a smaller denominator, and so you're going to increase it. In other words, a year-over-year comparison is not only is it not very useful, it tends to obfuscate what the numbers really are.
Well, here's where are we at here with, I don't see where we're getting domestic. Anyway, here's a list. Who wrote this article? Lori Konish. I don't know if we've read anything by her before, but anyway, she talks about the inflation breakdown for February 2024 in one chart. Now, she's obviously leaving some stuff out here, but I don't know. But the deal is what? Year over year is 3.2%. All items. Okay, now, and she's got on here, food is 2.2, food at home is up 1. Because there was some drop in some stuff last year. I get that. But now she's got juices and drinks up 27, uncooked beef 9.2, baby food 8.8, sugar 6.1, candy 5.8, tomatoes 4.8. I'm trying to find out the one here that's lower. All right, and then she gets food away from home. food from vending machines is up 8. Limited service meals and snacks 5.2. Full service meal and snacks is up 3.8. Well, again, there's not one here that's under 3.2 that I can find. Motor vehicle insurance, 20.6% up. Sewing machines, who the hell buys a sewing machine? Up 11%. Admission to sporting events, up 11%. That we would agree with. Domestic services, up 9.9%. Tax return preparation, 9.8%. Prescription drugs, non-prescription drugs, 9.3%. Care of elderly people at a nursing home, up 9%. Motor vehicle repair, up 8.5%. Outpatient hospital services, 7.9%. Ship fare, when's the last time you were on a ship? 6.9%, personal care products, 5.9%, rent of primary residence, 5.1%. Where the hell are they getting the 3.2, Kevin? They're picking on somebody's ass. Whose is it?
That's a good question.
I mean, it's nowhere near 3.2 on any of this stuff. I mean, I guess you could, if you never counted the new cars going up, you know, 40%, and now they're unchanged on the year. Is that a good thing? I guess it's a good thing, but really? What difference does it make? I still can't afford it. Just saying.
Yeah, well, that's why I said that, you know, what's the denominator on that?
But, I mean, I don't think she... It's not like she... Actually, she doesn't conclude this by saying they're all screwed up. She just, you know, she just put these out there. I mean, I don't see one here at 3.2, do you? Except for the food.
That's... You know, when it's broken out that way, that's just crazy. But that, you know, that tells you, you know, let's put it this way. How many people in the world, how many people who vote are going to see that analysis and look at it and ask that same question?
Well, I mean, I will say
you're going to have a candidate out there saying, see how good we're doing with inflation, how well we're doing with inflation.
I will say this, though, and I'm not...
And any president, any incumbent would say that.
True. Well, without a doubt. I mean, he's not going to... The other thing that I have real problems with, I mean, if I can do about it, is literally for the last how many months on the establishment survey, we've had 250,000 or more. I mean, there's been a couple of months we didn't, but we've had 250,000 or more new jobs. And you're going to hear that every second between now and yet. Look at the household survey. The amount of people working today from a year ago is almost exactly the same. There's been no increase whatsoever. Now, Kevin, how can those both be true? I mean, I guess I'll ask you, because you're the, you know, you're thumb closer to real America, I guess, maybe than me. What that says is 250,000 times 12 is what? 4 million people, right? No, it's 3 million people. Is it possible that the 167 million people at work, that 3 million of them have essentially gotten a second job? Could both of those numbers be right?
Oh, yeah, everybody's getting a side hustle nowadays. Yes, absolutely.
So my question is, how healthy is that? I guess it's healthy that somebody's able to find one, but, I mean, do we really want... Because, I mean, let's put it this way.
Why are people getting a side hustle? Well, there's two reasons that they do it. One is because the cost of living is high and you need to supplement your income. The other, and these are related, is that I can't get the hours anymore. They've cut back my hours at the factory, the warehouse, wherever it is I work. They've cut back my hours and I need to make up the money. I think there is a lot of the latter going on right now. And so, as you start to look at it, that is an indicator that, no, it's not healthy, because essentially we've turned a lot of full-time jobs into part-time jobs or barely qualifying as full-time jobs. Maybe you're working 4 days a week instead of five at 8 hours. So you're getting 32, not 40, or you're getting, you know, something like that, and you have to go make that up somewhere. I guess it means there's a lot of part-time available, and I think that's true. But is that healthy that there's not a lot of full-time available?
Well, Nancy talks about, in some families now, it's not two people working, it's two and a half, because somebody's doing, you know, an accountant's doing tax returns on weekends from January to April 15th, in addition
and
to
I
their...
I think that's always been true.
I think people, but she's saying it's more and more. Well, obviously, we talk about in the last 40 years or 50 years, some of the makeup and people not making what I would consider to be a living wage is two people in the house working, right? I mean, I'm not saying who should work or who shouldn't, male or female, but you've had to have two incomes. There's no way that 90% of the population right now affords the median home if two people aren't working. It's not happening. You need $150,000 to afford a $406,000 house if somebody gives you $80,000 down payment or $140,000 somewhere in there. I mean, how many people make $140,000? 5%? 8%?
Yeah.
10 maybe? Anyway, but one thing that it squeezes out, Kevin, is you can't do everything at once. The fact that people have families. Not that every mother and every father are terrific parents, or actually most people probably are pretty good parents, but the idea that you're now constantly working, it doesn't surprise me that a lot of kids are a bigger pain in the ass to other people than they used to be. Because nobody's around. I mean, I'm not going to turn this into a child care discussion, but whatever you do, there's always some other thing that happens, right? Who was the Chinese guy that said no man can do one thing? Only one thing, whatever you do, it has at least two or three things that happen?
Well, whatever it is, if you take away from the task of parenting, which is a full-time job, there will be consequences to that, of course.
Yeah, I mean, anyway, but I guess, all this stuff, I will say this, Kevin, there'll be people who say this political fight that's going on now is the most rancorous we've ever had. You know, I don't know, the people used to get in fights in the 1800s, but... from an economic standpoint, I'll lay this one right on the table, and I'll tell you what, I'll argue with anybody about it, to the death almost. You put the numbers together on the inflation, and virtually on every, for the last, going back to 1968, which is when I started studying it, you can't tell who became president and who didn't. I mean, this inflation, what we have right now, is absolutely an 8-year phenomenon. Both of these guys are equally as guilty. I mean,
I think it's a 28-year phenomenon.
Well, that too. But I'm saying that the COVID mess, Trump started it by screwing up, and this guy kept screwing up, I think. You know, I mean, it's
oh, yeah, I still hold Trump wholly responsible for COVID, and not for it happening, but for the response. And I'm way far away from over that.
Well, I'm talking about just the inflation piece of it. It's an 8-year phenomenon.
The inflation piece of it is part of it, but this whole idea that we needed to really get into tyranny, to lock people out of being able to live their lives. I'm not willing to vote for any candidate that does that. And we've got a lot of them at the state level and local levels. And, as far as I'm concerned, bleep them all.
Well, I mean, you and I have been around a little while, and I think we have a sense, even though we're sure not psychologists like our buddy Dr. Johnson, but I think we both are very aware of how people need other people. I mean, some more than others. There are people that don't mind being alone for a long period of time, but I mean, basically, people need other. There's a support thing. In a certain sense, we're pack animals. You take that away, there's people who just, I feel, and I did absolutely my best. I mean, we had a bar downstairs that somehow had the doors that slid open, and we were able to have like 3 or 4 tables in there with the doors open, freezing when it was 2 below 0. I don't think I ever missed maybe a couple of nights where I didn't see people. It wasn't like you got to go out and drink every night. I mean, half the time, none of us were even drinking.
I was in town, we went and found places that it was almost like speakeasies.
Oh yeah, yeah. But I mean, this idea. I mean, I went to Jack Gibbons. It's the interesting part is Jack Gibbons started as a speakeasy. I think they still got the same drapes on the place. Really nice steak place on the south side. So we went there, and of course, this is when the bars are supposed to be closed. The only thing they did was they didn't have the guys usually park in your truck because they didn't want to make believe the place was really open. So you had to park your own car. So we go in, and they maybe removed like a couple of tables. And so it was a little further apart, but still close enough where you could almost feel here the next guy's at the table. So the bar, which is supposed to be closed, is of course, butthole to elbow, right? So I'm hanging in there talking to all these guys. I mean, it turns out, I can't go 3 feet down the bar where I don't find somebody that I played softball with or basketball with or something. You probably know half of them too. So then we're sitting down at a table, and this guy's there with his family. The next table, there's a couple of couples and like 4 kids. And the one guy, we start talking. The guy goes, this is so stupid. He goes, I'm in a business. I'm still remodeling houses. I'm fixing people's plumbing. You tell me I can go pick somebody's toilet, then you tell me I can't go out to dinner? What the hell is it? These people are idiots. I'm like, duh.
Yeah, they're idiots. And, I still have people say, well, we had to how many 100,000 people died? Let's not even get into how they count that. But how many 100,000 people died? Yes, we had to do this. And I said, you do realize you're making the argument with all those people that died that it didn't do a damn thing.
Right.
That's my takeaway from the count.
they needed to protect.
It didn't work.
They needed to protect all the people in the nursing homes, and they didn't. So they all died early on. Someone had you, but one of the guys, Audrey's cousin, who unfortunately passed, guy who lived 2 hours away, he had 3 kids, and over at his place, we're having dinner because you couldn't go anywhere. He's got 3 kids sitting on his sofa, and he looks at me, he goes, you know how dumb this really is? I said, well, tell me. And he goes, that one's in high school, that one's in middle school, and that one's in 8th grade. And I said, okay. So the schools are within 3 blocks of each other. The young one, because there were 2 cases in 1 class, is an outbreak because they were in the same class. She's been home all week, okay. The one in the middle, they're like half and half. They're going in the morning and not going in the afternoon. And the other one's there all day. But you see him now? And I go, yeah. He goes, they're all on the same couch. They all come home to the same place. He goes, what is with these people? You know. He goes, what's the point?
I go, yeah, we just went mad.
Yeah.
Trump's initial instinct was not to do that. He let himself get browbeat into it, and just caved in. And then, of course, you know, when Georgia opened up, it's too soon. Same thing with Florida. He kept telling everybody it's too soon. And now, you know, he's trying to tell you that, he was the savior of everything.
I will say this, Kevin, and when you say browbeat, I was coming back from Audrey's. My brother was very concerned because my nephew has a little girl, but she was being watched by the parents, her grandparents. So he was very concerned that if she got it, she goes over there. I mean, they were in a risk area. So he didn't really want anybody around, which, you know, I have a problem with. So I'm driving home. And this, I remember this stuff. I don't know why I remember this stuff. When Pritzker, the governor of Michigan, had just done something, you know, I think you and I thought was pretty dumb, shutting down something and something. I don't know what it was. So Pritzker.
She was the one that was taping off sections of stores.
I sort of agreed with. Because here they shut down the blue jeans store, yet they let Walmart sell blue jeans, which I couldn't quite figure out.
Well, they were kind of doing it the other way here in Michigan.
Well, I mean, I don't think you should let those guys sell blue jeans.
They shouldn't have shut down any of them. But
right.
The logic here, if you want to think through the logic, is that, well, everybody knows that you won't get COVID shopping for food, but you will get COVID shopping for blue jeans.
Well, right. Oh, yeah, it was.
You know, how stupid is that?
Without a doubt. And I also wonder why some of the retailers, they could have paid me as a consultant. Why Macy's didn't just put two aisles of food on the first floor and open up. I have no idea, because they could have done that, but they didn't. Anyway, so but he's in this news conference. Whatever the person in Michigan did, which I thought was pretty dumb, it was something. They were closed down something even more bizarre than other people had done. And he's in this news conference now. Why you would have a news conference every day? I don't know, but he did. And he started out. Kevin, by saying that's not a good idea and we're not going to do it here. The abuse he was taking. I mean, there were a couple guys that were asking him kind of dumb questions, but these two ladies, I mean, I don't know who they were because I was on the radio, and we're talking about serious shrill on him. You don't care about people dying as much as the governor in Michigan. I mean, they were on him like white on rice. And I'm sitting there going, and I could feel him caving through the radio. I could feel him caving. First of all, he should have just walked out. But he didn't, but I think he started the conference with the right plan. By the time he was done getting beaten up by these people, I go, I'd bet anybody, I give 10-1 odds that tomorrow morning we have the same policy, and we did. I mean, they started hitting you. You don't care about people's deaths in Illinois, like what's her name does in Michigan. You know how many people are designed to
set up. I still go back to Governor Noem and. South Carolina, and her speech to the legislature, we're trusting our people to make the decisions that are best for them.
Right. Well, and a lot of people...
That was the right call.
There were so many people that jumped on board of it's up to me to keep you safe. One of my buddies, he's a goofball. A lot of my buddies are goofballs, and maybe so am I. He's walking his dog out in Naperville down a sidewalk. It's like 5 in the morning. Some guy opens the door and says, where's your mask? He goes, just get back in the house.
I prefer to not say mask anymore without putting magic in front of it.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Magic mask.
Hey, Irish got any chance today?
Yeah, they beat Wake Forest a couple of weeks ago, so yeah. Wake Forest is in desperately needs the game because they're right on the bubble, so they need to. They can't afford a loss, and they're out of the NCAA tournament. So that'll be interesting. Big Ten fires up its tournament today, so that'll be. Something else to watch.
They didn't have a play-in like the ACC?
Well, no, they do. They just start a day later. Their championship's on Sunday instead of Saturday.
Oh, okay. What's the story with our girls? Is anybody going to be healthy so we don't have just six?
No, it'll probably be six. Actually, they'll get one more back who was had a concussion in practice, so she'll probably be back, Becky Obinma. But Becky Obinma doesn't play. She's a grad transfer, came from I think Pepperdine or someplace like that, and she averages it appears to average about a foul a minute. So they can probably use those 5 minutes before
our kind of girl, eh? Our kind of girl.
They'll probably be able to use those fouls, so it may be seven. But either way, I can't imagine that the center Kylie Watson will be back. So they're an interesting team. They're a fun team. They're very likable, and they've had a whole lot of injuries this season. A few people have made it back from them, but not many. And through it all, they've been pretty darn good. So I'm very fond of that team.
That freshman, and there's a lot of these girls are fantastic athletes. I don't think I've ever seen anybody who hits the ground and bounces like she's half rubber ball, for God's sake.
Yeah, she is, and I agree with you. I haven't seen anybody who gets knocked to the floor as much as she does, because she just takes the ball fearlessly to the basket against bigger people. And winds up hitting the deck as a result of it,
and just bounces right up.
she had right towards the end of the game, and it was really a funny moment. They were doing intentional foul, so she kind of got hit hard from behind when North Carolina State tried to foul her, and so she got knocked face first down, but didn't face plant. She wound up sliding on the floor, almost like you've seen, baseball players sliding a wet tarp, and with a big grin on her face, because she knew this foul was going to be ice in the game. She only had to make one out of two, and they couldn't catch him. And so she's got the arms out like she's intentionally doing the slide, and a big grin on her face, and it was kind of a cool moment.
Does the coach get a
Anna Hidalgo is going to be the next big star in college basketball.
Does the coach get like a big wardrobe thing from the university? She always has some new outfit and it looks great.
She does, and one of her former teammates from back when Ivy played is a fashion designer for a living, and that's where she gets her wardrobe advice. But Neil Ivey always looks really good.
All right, Kevin, we'll talk on Friday. We have Russell in a bit, and as promised, we're going to talk about VIX volatility, because going into the election, I'm getting a lot of questions from clients regarding VIX and volatility and so forth. And S&P futures not only up 25 cents, NASDAQ futures down 25. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of HomeSource Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
There's something happening here. What it is.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom. I'm going to run the board SP Futures. Unchanged, unched, as they used to say on the trading floor. NASDAQ futures down 25. Do we have the professor?
I'm here. I'm on the road. What's going on?
On the road again.
Yeah. Road's on the road.
We're going to have to, for the next break, you got to play that, Andrew. On the road again. Was that Canned Heat, right?
I have no idea.
You should know. I think it was Canned Heat.
Absolutely no idea.
Hey, I did some research on the little thing you sent me, the Instagram.
Okay. The dog.
Yeah, Russell and I, and we have a lot of listeners every week. If I don't ask him about the dog, I get some nasty emails. How's Russell's dog doing?
If we don't, Mocha's doing great. I almost brought her down here with me today because it's spring break down here. But I've got I'm recording a personal finance class for all the freshmen in the IU system.
Oh, good for you. Good for you.
So I'm down here when it's really quiet, and I'll be in the studio all day today.
Are you driving?
About abusive credit cards and all that.
Oh, God.
All that kind of stuff.
So, the one you sent me about the other little guy, the other one who was...
Yeah, Russell the Frenchie, who they found on the side of the road and his back legs weren't working, and they did something. They cut him open and fixed him. So now he's in recovery, and eventually they'll put him up for adoption.
See, now what you don't realize is I have sources.
Uh-huh.
So the young ladies, Willie Nelson is on the road again. There you go.
Okay.
Wasn't the cream. So my two of the ladies downstairs, the 10 bar and the bar in our building, happen to be vet techs, and they just bartend one night a week for a little extra scratcho. So, of course, I showed the picture, which has this poor little cute little guy with this big, long scar on his back.
Yep.
It immediately got, although I'm too dumb to tell you the name of the surgery, but there's a name. They both recognize exactly what it was. There's a name. Mm-hmm. There's a scar, and this poor little guy's got to be, 7 inches long?
Easy. Oh, God. I mean, it's about half his back.
Yeah. And, and she said... That's some, whatever the name of it was. So, that's a surgery. He said he probably either was dropped or he jumped from too high of a height and he hurt his back legs. And that's a spinal fix surgery where they fix that. He says it's usually very successful if the right guy does it and takes a while for them to start working. He's got to be real careful that he doesn't hurt it again for the next 6 months or something, jumping off something. But she goes, that's like $8,000 to $10,000 surgery. And I said, well, I know
that's how much it costs.
And I said, would a place that is a rescue facility get a break? And she said they should get a huge break because people will do that, because then what happens normally is even when I adopted Scruff, he had been taken care of by this one vet area, and when they tell you, even if they got a discount, they'll say, hey, all Scruff's stuff is with this one vet. So immediately they became my vet for Scruff. So, I think there's a reason why you do that for these, rescue facilities, because if you were in any kind of driving distance, why would you change vets if they already know the dog?
Yeah.
It's just basic marketing. Hey, I was going through, Kevin, the CPI numbers yesterday, which are, to me, are a total fabrication, and
I agree with you. I can't believe the reaction that we got.
Yeah, I can't either. Or it's just a relief reaction. You know. Russell, we were down 2 days. We can't be down 2 days. It's by the dip. I mean,
I know, that's not how I understand.
Yeah, the NVIDIA, after what happened last Friday, do you believe the glee people are pouring back into this thing? They immediately assume that the sellers were the idiots, and maybe they were. Time will tell, but I don't know. I'm a little nervous on something that could turn 100 hours in 2 hours.
Oh, yeah. No, that kind of volatility is usually a sign of a top, isn't it?
Well, yeah, except when was the last time the usuallys worked out?
I know. That kind of ziggy-zaggy behavior typically occurs before we see some sort of a drop in, and that can be the broad market, that can be a hyped up stock like NVIDIA, but that's typically the way it is. I gotta run some numbers on NVIDIA and figure out what I really think it would be worth, because I really have no idea.
Well, it's a question of they are controlling. Mm-hmm. I had one of my buddies used to live in Singapore, and he was kind of involved in this. Some of the companies that they did consulting work for were involved in a lot of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it says NVIDIA has, the thing they sell you. I'm an idiot with this stuff, but when you see a chip, you look at the little thing on somebody's finger that used to be a transistor, and that's a chip, right?
Yeah.
But the things that these guys sell, like Kevin said, they sell these circuit boards that have got a gazillion chips in them. He says that that thing costs $50,000 to $75,000. I mean, it's not like
really,
you're buying a chip.
Really fast ones.
Yeah. So they have a head start. Now the question is, how long is the head start going to be? And is their technology really going to be the one that wins the day 2 years from now? Maybe, maybe not. I mean, they have a head start. It's really hard to value, Russell. I mean, but I don't know.
It's darn near impossible to value because NVIDIA, the first big bump for NVIDIA was the Bitcoin thing, because people were stripping the graphics chips out of gaming machines and using them for Bitcoin mining.
Yeah.
One of my neighbor kids was doing that when he was in eighth grade. He bought a bunch of PCs. And he tore out the NVIDIA graphic chips, and then he replaced them with cheap graphic chips. Used the NVIDIA chips to mine Bitcoin, and put cheaper chips in the PCs and resold them on eBay. In eighth grade,
it's unbelievable.
So he basically got all the equipment for practically nothing to mine Bitcoin in his house.
I'm really. Well, I'm kind of switching gears on here a little bit because you mentioned the inflation stuff. I absolutely cannot. I'm confounded by the difference between the 1968 to 82 inflation and the one we have now, or one we've had now really since, I guess I could make the case since 2000, but surely since 2007. The 78 inflation was seemingly. If you look at all these other countries that have done this, inflation over a period of time, if I don't even call the Weimar Republic in there, Argentina, Turkey, Venezuela, every one of those places, when they inflated the economy, their stock market essentially took off, because you inflated the stock market too. And we're doing that now, or we have for a long period of time. Yet in the 78 one, the interest rates percolated up so much where they were, I'll put it this way, they were an honest reflection of the future, in the sense that my yearly rate was 12% because I knew inflation was going to be 10, and I also wanted a little something for somebody borrowing my money. So I say I want 2%.
Yep.
And by the way, you got to cover the 10 that the thing's dropping while you're using it and not me. So why is it this time? What has the Fed been able to do? I suspect it has something to do with all the Feds working together. What has the Fed been able to do where they keep these 30-year rates, essentially, I'm looking right at them, they're 4.1, when anybody knows the inflation the next year is going to be 6 or 5 or even 3, why the hell would you loan money to somebody at 4? I mean, how do they manage to do... The reason why the market's running the way it is because somehow they've managed to manipulate, maintain these long-term rates at ridiculous numbers, to the point where people who invested in those bonds over the last certainly 8 years are down 40%, for God's sake, or 50, or whatever number you want. How are they able to do it, I guess, is my question.
How are they? Well, I mean, they've continued to flood market or flood money into the market. Money's got to go somewhere. So the money goes into the bonds to help keep the interest rates down. I don't think they did the same sort of open market activities that like they do now back in the, you know,
no, they didn't
back
blow
in
it
the 70s.
They've essentially, I mean, I was wondering if you were going to say that, because the only answer could be that anybody who wanted to price the bonds properly and essentially short them, basically got it stuck where the sun don't shine. The Fed ended up being a buyer the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
But how? Is that something you can do forever? I don't know. They're trying it in Turkey. How's that working out there?
Eventually, you're going to run out of money. You know, it's just like eventually. I was teaching bonds last night, on Monday, and there's a statement in the textbook that U.S. bonds are essentially risk-free because the government can raise taxes to make the coupon payments. And I just said, you know, I said, I don't want to get political, guys, but is there not a limit to how much they can tax us to make the payments?
You do realize, of course, you're not a Series 7 registered person, okay?
Not anymore, no.
Well, that's not a shot at you. But you do realize that if you even mention to somebody that a U.S. bond might not be risk-free, they can, like, report you.
Really?
That's supposed to be the risk-free rate.
Go right ahead. There's nothing in the world that is risk-free.
I would agree with that.
You know? Yeah. I mean, have you not seen some of the millions of disaster movies they make about how the U.S. is not around anymore because, you know, climate change or whatever? If you believe in climate change, you got to believe that U.S. bonds are not risk-free. I'm actually being serious.
When you say that, okay, we're gonna have a come to Jesus meeting one of these days.
Am I in trouble? No,
10 to 20 to 15.
Is Biden gonna talk to me like he's gonna talk to Netanyahu?
Well, I think he and Netanyahu have a problem. I mean, He supported the guy early on, and now he's like, this is way too much. I actually agree with Biden on this totally. This is way too much. I mean, in one man's opinion. Now, I know other people have different ones, but...
All right, I'm going to let you stay on topic.
I guess what I'm saying, if it gets to the point, what can the government do? Okay, they can... right now, let's just say right now, what do we have? We have 40% of the current spending is not covered by taxation. 45, 43, right, somewhere in there. So the problem is right there in front of us. So we're going to say, okay, let's look at how we're going to fix this in current desperation, whatever it is. Easy peasy number one, which we've been doing now for a while, is the Fed prints the 40%. There you go. You need the money, you got it. All right, well, that has its issues with inflation and everything else, but then you can lie about the inflation like they've been doing for a while. But even that, you can't...
You can lie about it, but people see it.
Right, but they have no power to do anything about it, right? Unless we start, you know, the whole country demonstrating or shooting, and hope we don't do either one of those. All right, so that's number one. Number two is you can raise taxes somewhat. Now, you have an awful lot of people in this country that don't pay. Now, if you went and made those people, if you met those people, no, I'm talking about people that should be paying and aren't. Now, you probably could cover, if you went to every corporation and made them pay for real, you probably could cover, you know, 20% of your fall, or 25% of your shortfall. You're not going to cover all of it, I don't think.
Right.
So then there's some kind of a general taxation. Could you increase the Medicare piece? Because that's where a lot of your problems are coming from. Or can you stare these hospitals in the eye and say, look, we're not paying as much, or these drug companies, we're not paying you $500 a month for Eliquis, which has been on the market for 18 years or 17, whatever hell it's been. I mean, could you do that? If you had the balls to, you probably could. Okay, now the third thing is, guess what? We owe you $100 on these bonds, you're getting 90 and like it. You know, that's clearly the default possibility. I don't think you can take that totally off the table if you're still talking about 40% shortfall 20 years from now, can you?
No, not at all. And I mean, if we get into some sort of global conflict, it costs us a lot of money, and at the same time we're fighting with the people that own a lot of our bonds, and I'm talking about China.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't think that somehow we couldn't end up in a situation where we default or delay payments at least?
Oh, sure. Delay payments.
Yeah. So.
But I mean, it's not like you and I want that to happen, or we're just smart enough to know how can you cover
it's
it.
It's the path we're going.
All right. There's four ways, basically. One is you print money, which we've been doing, which isn't the answer. Second is you raise taxes. The third is you cut spending, and the fourth is you don't pay. Duh. What is there a fifth choice? I don't know. Is there?
No, and I mean, the solution, what's going to happen, and it won't necessarily be a default, but and I've said this before, we're going to inflate our way out of this thing.
Well, we're going to...
Now, as far as the debt goes.
Well, okay, then I don't take this wrong.
Which is very, 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 very painful.
But who's we?
It's just the whole invisible hand thing. If you got too much money, you were talking in the first hour about every one decision that people make, it's got two or three side decisions. So to, try to keep everybody happy over the short term, it's going to lead to kind of some of the issues that we're seeing already.
Well, okay, but what I'm saying is
everything costs a lot more. And then the second kind of the second stage of what we've been seeing, and I can't believe it, it's not showing. And this is probably why we rallied, because it's not showing up as much as I would have expected in the numbers quite yet. Not that I'm the end all be all, but I probably think a lot like other traders. And I expected a high number yesterday. We got a high number yesterday in the stock market rally, which means it wasn't too high in everybody's mind.
Well, I still can't get over the 50.
Everybody's expecting worse. I really do think this is going to sound so silly, but I really do think that one of the reasons the stock market continues to climb these days is because everybody's braced for the second round of inflation or anything. We're not getting great news, but we're not getting bad news.
Well, if you looked at the unadjusted number, 0.6, that's 7. Mm-hmm. That's 7.2. That's pretty bad.
I know. Well, it's a little bit more than that when you start compounding it.
Yeah.
But I know. I looked at those numbers yesterday as they came across the tape. And I was like, oh, this is going to be bad. And we went down, I think we were down for about 43 seconds.
Yep. Well, but I say,
you watch the same thing.
I mean, I asked you the crash on the trading floor. I still can't get myself off the trading floor in terms of the way I talk to people, which isn't mm-hmm. so good, Russell. I asked you, mm-hmm. Who's we? And I want to tell a little bit of a story there, because mm-hmm. if the government, no question, I suppose we could, if we want to say they're us, I guess we sort of have to, they are without a doubt trying to inflate their way out of it, because the inflation is the greatest thing in the world for the government. You jump a tax bracket,
even
though money's
there. Yeah.
And on everything you buy, you pay more sales tax. Anybody who borrowed money from or lent the government money 10 years ago at 3%, well, you made 3% a year and you lost 7, all right, or you lost 5. They're paying you back with money that's worth a lot less than one that you gave to them. So yes, but now the question comes down is. But then again, you are them too. You just got screwed.
You know what? I really, just watching everything that's going on around me, I really have just kind of I've reached a point where you say I'm part of the we. I'm really not. There's nothing I can do or say that's going to change the trajectory of what's going on.
Well, it's true, but it's also pretty scary.
It's sad, but yeah. I really, and I'm gonna, this is almost gonna be like a therapy session for 5 minutes here, but like I'm afraid to I, I'm afraid to say a lot of things in this day and age.
Well, because you got a real job.
I don't want somebody calling up the dean at you know, Kelly and saying, Russell Rhodes said this, you guys should be embarrassed. You know, I just don't want to have those conversations.
Oh, I get it.
So I try to stay in that. I have, you know, I mentioned that I'm doing a personal finance. I'm doing a series of personal finance lectures, and that's why I'm here. There was a slide that started out, and I'm given the slides by the publisher. So there was a slide that started out. There are two types of people who complain about taxes, men and women.
Yeah.
And okay. I had them take that out.
Okay. Well,
I think it's like, if you speak up and you start to point out that, you know, things are not being done well, etc., you just get shouted down, and you can't, like Kevin said in the first hour, dude walking his dog and somebody opens up the door and says, where's your mask? Because COVID was driving everybody crazy, I actually got up and went running every single morning, and periodically I'd have somebody bitch at me about running without a mask.
Yeah, it's unreal.
I'd cross the street to stay away from people. I was respectful of distance.
But here's Russell, when I say who's we, I have a hopefully the extreme story on that, and I've done some research. Plus, mm-hmm. you remember Robert or Fed guy that was actually a genius on a lot of history and monetary history. Of course, he's working from home, so I never see him. By the way, nobody at the Fed comes to work anymore. Do you think that's cool? Our governmental people, nobody comes to work.
I'm related to somebody. I think he goes in.
If you come in now, you have to like a reserve a desk because everybody's office is gone. Anyway.
Oh, wow.
But the Weimar Republic, this is before Hitler. Actually, before, who's the guy before Hitler? Hindenburg? What the hell was his name? There was a Weimar Republic right after World War One, and all the inflation jokes are basically from the Weimar Republic, where they inflated stuff so fast that you had to bring a wheelbarrow. People would tell their boss, I got to get off at 10 to go buy bread because if I wait till the end of the workday, it's going to cost more. It's going to go up. So they essentially had this deal after Versailles with France and Britain to pay all these reparations. Well, it was a horse bleep deal for Germany. And to my extent, that's what caused World War II, to be honest with you. I'm actually in a camp now, Russell, where there's no...
It didn't help.
Well, there's no... I'm almost in a camp where there was no... War One and World War Two. There was one war with a big gap in the middle. I mean, there's
it truly was a 35-year global conflict.
So those guys decided, look, we can't pay, and they kept trying to renegotiate. And evidently, France and Germany said, you know, screw you, we're not doing it. So they started to inflate their currency, doing the same thing to a certain extent that our government is doing to the population. Okay, so they inflate the currency to the point where it's a total joke. Meanwhile, every German, unless you were in the market, because the market went straight up, so you kind of kept with it if you were in the market. Maybe if you own houses and stuff, you kept with it. But, you know, same crap as here. 90% of the population doesn't keep with it. So all of a sudden, the hardship among your population is dramatic. Well, it got so bad that finally France and Britain did renegotiate. Mm-hmm. And the people in charge of Weimar essentially declared victory. Hey, we got them to renegotiate. Look at the toll they took out of their people's hides. And what's going on here is essentially, unless you're in NVIDIA, unless you're in the market, or unless you have, you know, some kind of assets, unless you own a baseball team, you're falling behind here. You can't be keeping up.
I do okay as a college professor, and my wife, you know, is working part time at a bakery and et cetera, but. There are things that we're worried about. You know, we also got two kids going to college.
I'm
going to
guess your salary is not up for.
It's the worst period of my life.
Are you up 40%? I'm gonna. You don't have to answer it. I'm gonna say I doubt very seriously if your salary is up 40% in the last 4 years.
Oh goodness, no.
Yeah. Well, that's what it would have to be for you to be even, right?
Yeah. No, I do consulting work. I do other things. Everybody has a side gig these days, as Kevin said, and I'm not alone.
What do you say we go to? What do you say we have a side gig and go to break? S&P futures down 380. Nasdaq futures down 51. We're leaking a little bit here. Be right back, Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Well, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Andrew on the board. S&P futures down 475. The Nasdaq futures down 6150. Dow futures are actually still up a little bit. And stocks in the Dow are really moving that much at all here. But NVIDIA, which was up like $15, is now down 6. So that's one of the reasons why the Nasdaq has turned here. Over in Europe, we were up a little bit. Now not so much. DAX down 8. It's still, I'll call it flat. FTSE down 4 cents. That is flat. CAC around was up 50. Now it's up 37. They're still up. That's 0.5%. Over in Asia, we have the Nikkei down 101.3%. The Hang Seng is down 11. Call that flat. Shanghai down 12.4%. So slow in Europe and Asia. Now, yesterday we had this huge rally. Dow up 235. S&P up 57. NASDAQ up 246. That's a lot. 1.5%. Bonds, we're up 3 basis points, 4.19. The Bund up 3 basis points, 2.36. Japan unchanged at 0.77. Oil up $1.33, 78.89. Brent up $1.27, 83.19. Natural gas down 3 cents, 168. Arab up 4 cents, ouch, 263. Foreign exchange, Euro 109.4. Dollar is a little depressed the last couple of weeks, but not much. British pound at 128. Gold up 490, trying to bounce back from yesterday. It was down pretty much yesterday. It was down like 18 or 20 yesterday. We're up to 21.71. We still can't get through this 2200 number, but who knows, maybe we will. Silver up 11 cents, 24.50. Copper up 8 cents, 401. Crypto, the thing has been on a tear. Up 1100 bucks, 72,698. When I say crypto, I'm talking Bitcoin. There's obviously a bunch of those. Andrew, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
All right, it is 6:36 here in Chicago on Wednesday, March 13th. Starting off with just a little bit of sports, we have a win from the Blackhawks. Blackhawks won over the Ducks 7-2, and the Coyotes lost to the Wilds 1-4. Over to Chicago weather, it is currently 47 degrees. We have sunny skies right now, but that might change a little bit throughout the day. It's getting a little bit cloudy. We're going to have a high of 53, and that's going to hit about 11 a.m. And over in Phoenix, they're currently at 53 degrees. They got clear skies. They're going to have a high of 76, and that'll hit around 5 p.m. Now, finally, for Chicago traffic, still thankfully no major accidents to report. Just a little bit of heavy traffic on both the inbound and the outbound. If you're looking at the outbound, you expect some delays on the Eisenhower and especially Kennedy. And if you're on the inbound, expect delays from nearly every major expressway, especially just as our first hour right near I-94 coming in from that brand new construction over there. So that is all I got. Back to you, Chief.
Russell, without either one of us giving any investment advice here, I'll just kind of say where I am and a lot of the stuff with where the market is. I mean, to a certain extent, we see, you know, inflation going faster than essentially wages. Even when you have people like Janet Yellen, why do we have such an amazing distaste for that lady? For her to come out and say wages are going up faster than inflation now, wages are, but doesn't she understand that everybody is getting cut hours? That the actual weekly paycheck was down last month, even though wages were up? Anyway, but let's not go into my distaste for Janet Yellen. But
what you just said is why you have a distaste for her.
Right,
that's just not accurate.
No,
so there.
But I was out with a good friend for years and years and years, and matter of fact, I met the guy at Pullman. Right, we were friends there. That's how long ago
it
was. Yeah, and he, you know, now he's been an international guy. He's been on the show a couple times. I won't go into any names. International guy, and so I haven't seen him sometimes for 5 and 6 years as he lived in London and he lived out in the Far East, and he's done very well for himself, you know, which is great. I mean, I am, you know, godfather to one of his kids, a great family, and I mean, it's been a fabulous relationship. So, you know, we're out having a beer the other night, and he's, you know, I had no idea that he'd done as well as he did. And he's got some accounts here and some there, and he's telling me some of his holdings, and I think we have to be careful here, Russell. As much as I cheer the stock market for my clients, because I like to make money for my people like everybody else, you have to be somewhat mindful that right now it's kind of like the last leg. That and home prices are the last two legs of like a five-stool chair that are still there.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm not saying they're going to disappear or whatever, but we're obviously losing any kind of wages versus inflation. We certainly we've lost any kind of commercial real estate in some areas. It's been destroyed. Some areas not so much. In some areas doing okay. Some areas it's been destroyed. Strip mall, I mean, you name it. But the market is here. And we're having this conversation, and finally I said, you know, I don't want to ruin the evening. I said, but you're the one who brought it all up, you know, and it's not up to me to give, you know, investment advice in a bar. I said, but I'm just telling you. I said, remember when we were 30 years old? And we went to a bar and all we did was critique the ladies. Well, that ship has sailed. Now, you're damn near retired and you've got these high risk stocks and all these things. I said, you got to look in the mirror. I said, right now, if it isn't me, because I'm actually really good at it, you need to get all these accounts in one spot where you know where they are, and you've got to protect yourself where if the world goes to hell, the stock market goes to hell, you lose 5% and not 50, because you can't. If you lose 50, everything you're doing is going to be a problem going forward. If you lose 5, maybe we get something cheaper, but you can't be. He goes, well, it's going to cost me. I go, I know it's going to cost you. It costs you for car insurance, for God's sake. I mean, I said, I said, we're not going to go through positions or investment advice. You got to look in the mirror and say, how old are you? I mean, when you were 30, your account was 10, and you're making 100. Okay, now it's the other way around. you got to be careful. I mean, I'm just saying, you know. And of course, his biggest holdings NVIDIA.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
and oh well.
Yeah.
Which is great.
Which is great.
Good for him. Which is great. Really well, but I finally got my Bloomberg open, and I'm looking at NVIDIA's fundamentals.
What I'm saying,
more exciting than financial analysis in the morning on the radio.
Well, I'm saying if he was a college professor, not mentioning any names, doing real well, and he's got 200 shares of NVIDIA, I wouldn't even talk to him about it. Sounds okay to me, right? If you like the company, but now, if you're not working and you got a lot more, then it's a problem.
Yeah, I'll tell you their revenues are projected to more than double in the next 2 years.
Which they better to grow into this price.
They sure as hell better.
Yeah.
I'm looking at their cash flow and everything else. Their cash flow looks like it's going to go up about between the end of 2024 and the end of 2026. They've already finished 2024, but their year end is the last day in January. So they're kind of like a retailer.
Okay.
Right. So when I say 2024, that's the numbers we just got. But yeah, their cash flow is going to go from 44.8 billion to 97.6 billion.
Well, I think their revenue needs to double to be anywhere near this price.
Their cash flow is going to go from 35 to 85 billion.
So what
the cash flow is the number we care about.
What is that per share? Do you have any idea? I mean, it's not in front of you, I know, especially if you're driving.
I don't have the per share number in front of me.
Well, then don't try and calculate it if you're in the car, but I'm saying
I'm not in the car. No, I'm in my office.
Okay, because I mean, this
I'm
is
in my office now.
These numbers are you got to be careful. And you know what? I'm not the guy who's not going to say that they need to double the next year. They could triple. Mm-hmm.
It's about in a couple of years it'd be about $60 a share in cash flow.
Okay, and it's trading 900.
Yeah, I mean and the thing is, I can only see the numbers going out the next couple of years. I would assume that number tops out at some point. I can't justify the valuation looking at the numbers that I see right now. Although I can understand, I don't think it's outrageous.
I don't think
it's outrageous.
But what assumptions?
At all.
What assumptions? Let's go to one that's easier to value. Well, used to be easier to value. Let's roll to Costco. Price
Costco's out of control.
Well, but no,
it's a wonderful place, and I love it when I go to buy socks and come home with a pinball machine. There is no better place on earth than places you can do that at.
But okay, now my question is, you and I look at it, and again, my theme kind of this week so far has been defining the industry and the stores we're talking about. And we're going to define them and say, okay, this is what a retailer normally trades for. This is what something else normally. Now, the question is, they're trading higher than that. Now, either I'm right and they're a retailer and they shouldn't be that high, or I'm wrong and there's something more than a retailer, or they're somewhat of a monopolist retailer where they'll be able to maintain pricing even if now is Costco.
I think that they're given a premium valuation because they do have a niche monopoly there.
I think they do too. The question is how much.
But how much? And yeah, and then the other thing is, I think it's thought of as somewhat of being a defensive stock, so you don't mind owning it if you think we're going to go into a recession. Because I mean, I won't be buying another pinball machine from Costco, but I still would go there and get my socks and all the other stuff. But I would maintain my membership, which I think the membership is the big part.
Yeah, I just paid that. It might be my last time. Because we're members of Sam's and Costco, and
oh my gosh, you're working both ends there.
Yeah, and my guys here, well, a couple of the guys use Sam's for their prescriptions.
I should look into that.
Anyway, but now
if you own a pillbox, you need to be pricing out prescriptions, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, the question ought to be that if we go into a shall we say an admitted recession, and all of a sudden
an official recession,
but all of a sudden things drop down. Does that mean that 15 other stores are going to go out of business and Costco even does more? I mean,
that's the thing is, like a Costco, Walmart, those kind of retailers, you don't mind owning them, especially Walmart, if we get an economic slowdown. So you've got and Costco, and this is why I'm not saying I'm telling you the story, not the numbers.
Yeah.
In Costco, you have a company that if we do get into a recession, that they're going to hold up fairly well because their parking lot's still going to be packed on the weekend.
Okay. Now
you know
I'm going to ask.
Now Nordstrom's no.
But I'm going to ask you the question, two questions. Uh-huh. Right now, it appears to me that 1% of the population is getting all the money. So I'm not so sure you couldn't make the argument. So, okay, two things. So whenever you talk, you always give me like four questions because the stuff you say.
I know, I got to stop doing that.
No, but you don't realize how your answers have so much depth to them.
Well, I know I end up. You know what? I'm just like what you said that the Chinese saying was that I give you one answer and I open up two or three doors, and I shouldn't do that.
Okay, so let's.
So I'll try not to do that.
Okay, so let's.
I know I do.
Let's pick apart your Walmart comment. When I say pick apart, let's redefine it. All right, so one part of what you just said is if the economy goes crummy, I'm going to say two things will happen to Walmart. One is people who normally didn't shop at Walmart are going to be forced.
Absolutely.
To go to Walmart. But on the flip side of it is, the people that are going to be hurt the most are Walmart's customers right now.
The normal Walmart shoppers.
Those as to which one of those...
They'll scale back.
Yeah, so there's a positive and a negative, which is bigger. I don't know.
They balance each other out.
Evenly?
They really do. They balance each other out. Because Walmart's a great defensive stock. So... And those big box sell you everything. Retailers, they have such great economies of scale that you know they get really nice deals on the things that they resell. As far as how they don't really have to pay back, don't have to pay for them for some time.
Yeah.
So they make some money off the float. But the places that have all of the consumer staples and the places that you look at to try to get the best deals on consumer staples, those stocks are going to hold up during a recession. So if you're going into 2024, excuse me, and you think that, you know, there's a possibility of a recession, but also we might get, you know, we might have moderate growth, Costco's going to be a good stock. And that may be why it's overvalued right now.
Well, I'm going to say it's going to be a very good company, which I actually think they are. They pay their people well and everything.
Oh, they're an excellent company.
Yeah.
People like to work.
Yeah.
People like, I mean, the professor that I go back and forth with, they basically are at Costco three times a week.
Well, but you and I, unlike, maybe a lot of the population, realize there's a huge difference between being a great company and having the stock a good buy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now my question is, if the thing that's holding the company or the country together, I think in a lot of ways, is not the income piece, it's the wealth piece.
Yeah.
Now if we lose the wealth piece, now what? When I say market goes back to mid-COVID levels or something, boy, I'm not predicting this. I'm sure I'll put those damn... I mean, I could actually see, if you do the numbers, a 40% drop across the board. And you know what? If you put the numbers together, if you wandered in from a moon from the other side of the galaxy, if the market went down 40% and walked in and never knew it was up, you probably wouldn't say, God, it's way too cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You might not. You might say, boy, it looks like it's fairly prior. I mean, I don't know. I mean, like you said, if NVIDIA all of a sudden is 600 tomorrow, is it a screaming buy if all of a sudden, like Intel or somebody has a chip that's almost as good as theirs? I don't know. There's a lot more to that story.
I think there are people that run some sort of cash flow analysis and do have an idea as to what they think NVIDIA should be worth for the long term. And if you gave me, and we don't want 10 minutes of dead silence, but if you gave me 10 minutes, I could probably come up with some sort of valuation based on the cash flow that they've got going.
Well, could you?
I pulled up the, just to switch back to Costco, because I have the number there.
You know, their PE based on their last year earnings is about, you know, it was about 38 or so.
Which is real high for retail.
It is real high for retail, but their average PE from 2020 through now for each year has been between 37 and 42.
Okay.
So it's been valued like this for some time. And that might be another reason that people are happy to buy shares of Costco at current levels, because it's slightly overvalued relative to history. It's not ridiculously overvalued, or it's not a stock like Nvidia that you really need to do a little bit of finagling to come up with a justifiable valuation.
Well, the one doing on CNBC,
I can do that right now with their numbers. In fact, 40, 15. Yeah, I think the stock probably should be around 650 instead of 730. But you know, when you turn it into a normal stock price, yeah, you're talking about 73 versus 65.
Yep.
Which, you know, it again, I know that on radio, I'm sure a lot of people are like, "What the hell did he just say?" But I'm just saying it's, you know, I'm just giving it a 10-for-1 split real quick and talking about the kind of stock prices we're used to.
All right, so you and I have been talking now for a few minutes about Costco. We both love the place because the people seem nice and blah, blah, blah. Now, are you willing to take that 38-40 PE and apply it to Lululemon, ANF, Abercrombie & Fitch?
No, because they have more, because they don't have, they're not as defensive retail-wise.
Right, but I bet they're the same numbers. I bet they're the same numbers.
Oh, you think so? Which one?
Well, you look up ANF, I'll look up Lulu.
What's
ANF is Abercrombie & Fitch.
Oh, ANF, yeah. You know, I got rejected to work there so many times. I hate that place because I'm just not good looking enough.
Well, okay, they never wanted me in their catalog. Remember when the dudes were like all naked and stuff?
I know.
I'm not, so they didn't want me anywhere naked.
Where are those? Come on.
All right, Lululemon's 58.5.
Well, yeah, because
that's a number.
They make people look good. I can't find. Why in the heck can't I find?
Hey, just put ANFPE in there. It pops right up.
Well, I can't find it in Bloomberg.
Oh God. Well,
sorry.
See what happens when you're the high end dude. All you gotta do is put ANF. ANF. Ratio is March 11th is actually 19 because they just made some money for a change. So they're that's where they are. They get a load of this. Wait a minute. Here we go. Current PE is 58. The end of 2022, the PE was 47. So
that's on Lululemon.
Yeah.
Yeah, Lululemon.
No. This is ANF, Abercrombie & Fitch.
Oh, ANF. Okay.
But I mean, you know, you and I are willing to say maybe we found some unusual stuff about Costco that's going to make them, you know, if there is a last resort, they're the last resort. But then you can't say, well, now all retailers need to be 40. I don't think so.
No.
No.
They shouldn't be. So, I mean, maybe the more popular ones. What's Macy's?
I'll find it. Macy's, I still don't understand how come those guys didn't put, a canned goods aisle in a store and stay open during the COVID.
They should have. I'd have been more than happy to have somebody offer me perfume and then pick up some lettuce.
Oh, God. Are we ever anything that was like, did you ever work downtown when Marshall Fields was open there in like their heyday?
Oh, yeah. I did, and then I was one of those people that swore I would never go in when Macy's took them over, and that
I've never been.
I forgot, and then I spilled something on my shirt one day and had to run over there and get some, you know. So,
well, you spilled something on your cardigan.
Of course, I'm notorious for getting stuff on myself.
it happens. I got their PE at. Let me get to the beginning here. Where am I? I got them at. I don't know. I can't find a darn thing. It's I think they're pretty high, but they were the if you wanted to see every, not that anybody was ever like this, you know, as a male, if you wanted to see, all you had to do is on your way to lunch, because I worked at Pullman. We were 200 South Michigan.
Okay.
200 North Michigan. We were in the Borg Warner building.
Oh, that's even better. That's a pretty good. That's an easy walk.
If you went to lunch and you didn't walk through Marshall Fields at lunchtime, I guarantee you're a male without a pulse. I mean, because.
I worked for Highland Capital Management in Memphis, which was a division of First Tennessee, and we were across the street from Goldsmiths, which became Macy's. And as soon as the market closed, me and two other fellows would go walk around the we would walk through the mall and we'd walk around the perfume counter and then come back.
Without a doubt.
Oh yeah. No, we all had our favorites that were working.
Now, the only thing you had to be careful of is because everybody, all the ladies were spritzing themselves with the stuff to see how it smelled. You had to be careful you didn't get in the way.
Exactly.
Because then you're liable to get spritzed and get back to work and everybody's like looking at you weird.
Yeah. Yeah.
God. The things you remember. So what are we going to be able to get? Are we collectively, the are we going to get away with this? That we're going to.
No. No.
You're about the fifth person who tells me no.
I would not want to be the next president to save my life, because because you're going to go down as one of the worst presidents in history, and it may not even be your fault.
Well, it never is.
No, I mean, even if a new person got elected, there's two. Things were bad. I heard somebody made a real great argument that back in 2016. There were so many landmines around the world that whoever got elected was going to have a hell of a time and probably be a one-term president. And this was somebody that hated Hillary Clinton, and they thought that Hillary Clinton was going to get elected. And we were getting ready to go through some longer-term cycle things that would create a lot of headwinds. And we're still hung up in all of that. And I wouldn't wish being president on one of my worst enemies in the next 4 years for the next term, because you're not going to be able to get anything done. You've got Congress doesn't work with anybody at all. Everybody's suing everybody all the time, and I'm cool with government deadlock or gridlock when everything's going fine. But they need to be taking some actions, and the actions involve tightening the belt, doing things that people aren't going to like.
Right.
Politicians ain't doing that.
What did your
they try not to do it all the time, but it's just they've gotten so blatant about it, it's ridiculous.
What did your two buddies, the two old farts? I think they're still alive. I hope they are. Good guys. Remember the Simpson Bowles? Was it Simpson Bowles?
Yeah,
they did the study on Obama's administration and what they actually would have to do to bring the deficit. And they were cutting this out, cutting that out. This guy doesn't deserve the money. Okay, the two. I always remember those guys because they were all real skin and kind of hatchet faced dudes.
Uh-huh.
Anyway,
you took them. Yeah,
but
speaking of, there is one thing I wanted to bring up.
Well, let me finish this one real quick. The one guy said,
"Okay, because I know we're running up."
He goes, "If we didn't piss you off, we either forgot about you or you forgot to read it."
That's fantastic.
Go ahead.
Okay, so I talk about my sister down in Memphis every once in a while, and she's very much of a blue collar person. We're very different. Love her to death. She has a million friends and has a great social life. She works for a bakery, and she got some money from the government and stuff. They ended up doing. They're right next to a hospital, so they were open. Like half time during COVID, and would just deliver things to all the different nurses stations and everything in the hospital. She's actually having her wages garnished because the government decided that she got too much in funds sent that she didn't even apply for, but they sent her a check, and now the government's coming and she's going to have her wages garnished for the next year.
She didn't apply for it and they sent her. How did that work?
Yeah, well, a lot of us got checks, but she was recognized as being completely out of work, and she wasn't. But they are coming after her for like $3,000 or something like that. There are much better ways, but there are much bigger fish to go after.
Russell,
the government wants to claw back some money.
Russell, you obviously you grew up in a, you know, in a tough area, but you weren't in the South Side. She's the easiest apple to pick off the tree.
And she's the one that has absolutely no voice around this one at all.
We went through the other day, 130. We're going to run over. You know what? We might have an opening next week on Tuesday because we forgot to talk about VIX today, which was we promised everybody.
I know we did.
But
I screwed you up there. Let me know which time on Tuesday. I'll be doing the drive down, but I'll be riding.
We'll run over a minute. How is it, since somebody actually wrote in, and I dug into the PPP loans, how is it, everybody knows I went to Catholic school, but how is it we can't give a dime to a Catholic school that they're providing education, okay? So a lot of them are closed.
A public service.
Yeah. We can't just say, okay, we're not going to pay all the tuition there, but by the way, here's $2,000 because we know you're doing something. How is it that we gave 138,000 PPP loans that were forgiven to community organizers and churches? How is that legal when you can't give a penny to somebody?
It's the loudest voice. It's paying your constituency for turning out the vote. It's, you know, a lot of things like that.
I just anyway. You
and
have a
story, it is infuriating. I'm gonna get more details from my sister on this thing.
All right,
she just told me in passing.
Well, both Joel and Kenny are out Tuesday, so there's a half hour there. We could do that, and we can do VIX because I think I've got all kinds of people saying should we buy a big VIX spread through now in November, and I actually don't know the answer. And the last thing I want to do is say yes, go ahead, and everything blow up on people. So.
Okay.
So we'll talk. SP Futures.
I've just been buying out of the money calls. Just in case.
SP Futures down a buckaroo. NASDAQ Futures down 40. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.
That's all, folks.